Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
To the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes and the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This bound, every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Join me each week for unfiltered discussion about beauty trends, self-care journeys, wellness tips, and the products we absolutely love and cannot get enough of. If you are a skincare obsessive and you spend 20 plus minutes on your skincare routine, this podcast is for you. Or if you're a newbie at the beginning of your skincare journey, you'll love this podcast as well because we go so much deeper than beauty. I talk to incredible and inspiring people from across industries about their relationship with beauty. You'll also hear from skincare experts. We break down lots of myths in the beauty industry. If this sounds like your thing, search for Naked Beauty on your podcast app and listen along. I hope you'll join us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Keeping It Real on Purpose, and this is our special segment called Real Talk with life coaches. And today we're going to talk about grief with our special guest, none other than Danielle Boer. I am so sorry. Please forgive me. Okay, Danielle Boer. Let me get her description now so I don't mess her up. Danielle Boer is a grief coach, a speaker, and an author who helps others heal through perseverance and forgiveness. After witnessing her brother's suicide via telephone, she embarked on a powerful forgiveness journey, becoming a life coach and writing a book in his honor. Drawing from her experiences with trauma, teen motherhood, homelessness, narcissistic abuse, and child loss, Danielle inspires others to find strength, healing, and purpose beyond their pain. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Well, I am so glad that you're here. How do you show up in a world?
I think that's a great question. And my answer is different than it used to be, but Okay. Authentic now. So yes. I show up in the world authentically me. And I wasn't that before. So it's awesome to say that.
Yeah. You know, I get this all the time because I speak about this in everything, authenticity, and I can't express to people how gripping authenticity is. And I know that they say it's overused, but it's not used enough. Just like Dr. Phil says, common sense is not common. You know, so authenticity, yeah, yeah. Talk about your authenticity. Talk about discovering that.
Yeah. So I can go into more of why later, but I kind of at one point was just like skating through life, kind of in like two different worlds. And on the outside, I looked like I was okay. On the inside, not okay. And I was a single mom. I'm a single mom again, but different children. So I had kids young, 18 and 20.
Okay.
And so now, years later, I've been through a lot. We'll talk about that. But becoming authentic was like, who in the world am I? What do I want? What do I? So when I was turning 40 that year, and now I'm turning 43 this year. So he's my ex now, but he was very supportive. And he said, like, I said, I want to be an actress. I want to do this. And he's like, go ahead, try it. And I'm a nurse. So, you know, I don't have a lot of time to do other things, per se, but year before that, I started like doing some background acting. And then I did, that year I started stand-up comedy. And then I started, my podcast, and then I became a life coach, and then I wrote the book. So like all in one year, I was like bah, 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 bah. And then I figured out like things that I love, like who I am. I'm not ashamed of who I am. I'm a lot, right? So I'm very like, I talk to my patients a lot. People sometimes like make smarky comments about it and all this stuff. But I love my patients. Yes, I could be a little bit faster sometimes with time management, but they have a really good connection with me for the most part. And people really appreciate it at the end of the day. So
that's great.
I started to be more confident, to love myself. I do positive affirmations. And so I figured out like, who am I? What do I want? And I really love myself. And the longest time I would have never really said that. So.
And it takes a lot for you to get like that. And I'm going to tell you how I became authentic is I had to go back and do a lot of inner work and a lot of childhood work and a lot of shadow work, only to find out that brave little girl at 5 should have been around. The one that talked junk all day, wasn't afraid to jump out of a tree, you know, wasn't afraid to jump off a roof, wasn't afraid to tell the truth. That's who we really are, is that 5-year-old kid that was like, okay, if you asked them if they had an ugly dress on, right? How's this dress look on me? They would tell you, oh, it's ugly, you know? Right? We just know how to do a little bit more diplomatic now, you know? So authenticity isn't applied enough. And I'm so glad that you grasped it. It's so important. Yeah. Okay. So tell us about, you know, I know that you're a grief coach and I like that this is being captured, you know, and it's very important. Talk about how you got to that point and how it was introduced and maybe even talk about your brother and how that played a great part in that.
Yeah. So as you mentioned that I have experienced grief in a lot of ways. And lots of people don't understand that grief is just like not only somebody passing away.
Right. Exactly.
It could be a pet, or say you have to rehome your pet and you had them for 10 years and you can't take them with you. That's also grief. Divorce. I had a blended family and I left the state. And then my son that I raised for 7 years, they stopped letting me see him and stuff like that. So that was a grieving process. And so there's a lot, but you know, I lost a baby stillborn and just all kinds of stuff. But my real like grieving that I didn't even know that could be that deep was when I witnessed my brother commit suicide on the telephone, and I kind of just shut down. I went from the most extroverted person in the world to literally so monotone. And I was in nursing school at the time, and I was a single mom. So I was working two jobs, going to my prerequisites, and taking care of two kids by myself. And so I was, who knows where I was or when I was. I was like, oh, I'm so confused.
He was on autopilot.
Yeah, I was. And so when he passed away, I wanted to drop out of school, but I got accepted, which was such a blessing. A lot of people didn't get accepted on their first time to nursing school, but I did. And so he passed away in July, and I got accepted into the night program in September. And okay. So I had to really debate, like, am I going to do this? Can I do it? And so that was a journey in itself. The psych, rotation and clinicals was really hard for me because he had just passed away. And now I'm helping people that may want to commit suicide or doing all these things. And so at the time I did well, but then later on I would cry and just break down. I was triggered by a lot of stuff. Yeah. And so years and years and years later, then I started dating someone, then he moved in with his son, which I just mentioned, he was four at the time. And so I kind of started over with a 4-year-old, which was also a blessing because, my boys were a little bit older. And so with the 4-year-old, he was still kind of toddlerish. So I had to do things with him, and it kind of snapped me out of it a little bit. But then I was still going to school, then planning a wedding. Then we ended up getting separated. I moved to Georgia, which is where I am now. And I didn't realize that I wasn't healed because I just kept going. I always kept going. When I lost the baby, I literally returned to work early. I had to get a blood transfusion. I almost died. I was bleeding out.
Right. Yeah, of course.
And so I just kept going. And so that was my thing. But I, when I moved to Georgia, like I said, I started dating this guy. And so I started thinking about things that I liked or wanted to do that I just didn't do because I put them on the back burner. Then I was raising 4 kids because I have a daughter now. And so I went through a forgiveness journey and became certified as a life coach after, I started doing comedy. And then became the podcast. And at first I never talked about how my brother passed away. I didn't really speak about it. And it was because that word or suicide and the topic is very much pushed under the rug, but it really happened. And so when I went to church in Ohio, I wasn't allowed to talk about it. And so finally I got to the point where I was like, no, I want to help people. So that's kind of how everything happened. And I got certified. And then at one point I said, I might change my my niche for coaching because my book is for children. It does not talk about the suicide at all. It actually talks about, it's a character. It's a fiction because my brother didn't get help. So this character gets help. He has severe OCD. So I thought, well, maybe I'll help because my second son has a lot of diagnosis and I went through a lot with him. Maybe I'll help parents and kids. Well, then people will come up to me. Literally in the store, anywhere in the laundromat, wherever I'm at, and we would talk about people that they lost. And it's it was like I was meant to do it. It's a really tough topic to talk about. And I'm very grateful that people even open up to me and they're vulnerable with me and they trust me. So I feel like I was called to do that. I also do trauma, help with trauma as well, but I feel like I was called to do it. And so I'm very grateful that I'm able to because it's really important and we all experience grief at some time in our lives.
Right. So let's unpack because you packed everything in and I didn't want you to. I want you to tell a piece at a time. So I want to take apart that's something you said very importantly because it's part of grieving and we all don't know that we do it. And it is being on autopilot. That's a symptom of grief. Let's talk about that because it's important that you said it because as you were talking, you were on autopilot. But let's talk about being on autopilot, piloting grief.
Yeah. So basically, when you're grieving, you might not know where to start or what to do, and you just try to continue life. If we lose someone, essentially, especially if they're your spouse or your child, you have to figure out what the new normal, like what's your new mm-hmm. routine? What are you going to do? And so a lot of times you just kind of skate through life, and it's like literally like on autopilot. Like yeah. every day is like monotonous, just like kind of the same thing. You don't have maybe not as much joy as you used to. You don't really, you're just kind of getting by. You're not really, you're like just surviving, but not right. thriving. And right. so that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. I know when people experience, when they're on autopilot, and I've seen this with some of my clients and friends, they become emotionally numb and they detach. So it's like they're walking around almost in a zombie-ish, like I'm here, but I'm not here kind of, you know, effect. And their daily routines, they do their, like you said, they do them all day. They're engaged, you know, fully engaged. They get things done. But they're overwhelmed. And I think autopilot is a way to protect them when they're overwhelmed in pain. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would say too. It's kind of like, kind of not the same thing as denial, but kind of just like, right. just going by, because my first thing back then was denial. Even when yeah. I was losing the baby was mm-hmm. denial. And like, it was like, whoop, everything's fine. No, not everything is not fine, you know? And yeah. so that's the thing, when you're on autopilot, it's like, you don't go anywhere towards the healing, because you're kind of just like at this stagnant like state, you know?
Right.
And so it's a lot. I've been there.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I could tell you that I experienced it after my brother had passed away.
Oh,
and he best passed away on his graduation party.
Oh.
And it was a swimming accident. Someone pushed him in, and no one knew how to swim at this. I don't know why that even was a thing for them to be at a pool party. Nobody knew how to swim, and there was no lifeguard there. But.
Say what you want about AI, but it's here, and it's helping businesses get more done in a day. Wix's website builder is infused with AI so you can stay ahead. Create a beautiful, functional website just by describing your idea. Track how your site appears in AI search results. Create custom images on demand, or launch an entire campaign in a matter of minutes. Wix gives you AI wherever you need it. Try it now for free at wix.com.
Do Crohn's disease symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya guselkumab may help. At 12 weeks, rapid symptom remission was achieved in most patients taking Tremfya, and some experienced visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Explore what's possible and ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more, or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
I was so upset, because we were best friends, you know, and we were like best friends. And I just knew that he was gone. Before we got there, I was like, he's not here. I feel it. And it just disturbed me. But I was one of these grievers that was out loud. Everything was loud. I was breaking things. I was screaming. You know, I was just out there. I was just, you know, and I think, not that I like it better, but when I was depressed about when I was at work and I was becoming burnt out, because that is almost, you get into that depressive state, right? You get into that, and you get into that mode, it's like you're lost. You're gone. Because once you become burnt out, right, you're gone. So it's like a grief almost, correct? So you, I didn't know that I was always getting headaches, right? I forget stuff all the time. I will forget everything. Like what the heck? I'm driving. Like, where am I going? You know, I felt disconnected. I was always tired, sleeping all the time. And I, like you said, it was survival mode. I was trying to survive by just shutting out everything.
Yeah, exactly. So if I didn't have kids, I don't know what would have happened. But yes. I had to keep going for them. And that's why I ended up going to nursing school.
Right.
Thank goodness, because I have been a nurse for 11 years now. And it is such a beautiful thing. And I'm so glad I get to help so many people. But I almost wasn't there. I tried to drop out of school 3 times during nursing school. And once was the week before, not even a week before. I think the week of my graduation, I tried to drop out and they're like, no.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense now.
Right. And I was like, I can't. They're like,
yes, it was depression that just had you, didn't make any sense. You were thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
Your brain was not there. It was just like, it was there in a sense, but I want to say the mind, the mind wasn't there. Yeah. It's very, grief is very intricate. Like I said, I was one of those ones that grieved out loud. You know, my brother passed, I was tearing up things but I was emotional every day. I was crying every day. It was like, I was crying every day. Song would come on that guy, you know?
Yeah.
And, I was younger. I'm 3 years older than he. However, that was my best friend. I think I was mad at God. I was mad at everybody. I was mad at my mother. I was like, Mom, why didn't you beat these people up? I'm like, beat them up or something. I was mad at everybody, just everybody. And I think that what you said about grief, autopilot, even in my anger, I still was functioning at work. But the thing I was doing at work, I was quiet as a mouse. Yeah. I remember it now. I'm thinking about it. I wouldn't socialize with anybody. I'd be in my own head. Grief has a little bit of intricacy into it. It's very intricate, you know, and I think we go about life not realizing it, you know, especially if we're grieving. We could grieve a job, you know, we could grieve a job. A pet or something, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's happened a lot. I mean, look at COVID or different times like that, say Hurricane Katrina in that area.
Yes.
Look at everybody losing their businesses, losing their homes, getting food bumps because it's something that's grieving.
Absolutely.
You know, or the fires in LA, you lose your whole belongings, everything.
Absolutely.
Pictures, all these things. And it's you can't get those back.
No.
And it's a blessing that you're alive. Yes.
But you can't see it because of that. What's going on. Right. But, you can't see it. Right. Mm.
Right. So there's so many things that happen when we grieve and everybody is not the same. Some people may never go through denial. Some people may never get angry. Some people may, it's just different. And so, but something you talked about was when you're mad. So my thing is that I teach, not that I made this up, because it sounds like I did not make up.
No, it didn't sound like that. It did not sound like that.
But my main thing, step one that I go through with the clients is forgiveness. Yeah. And so, like you said, you just get you're just like, what? Why didn't you stop? Like, what happened?
Yeah.
And
you're start just blaming. So angry. Yeah. Start blaming.
Mm-hmm. And so with me, I had to forgive myself. Self-forgiveness is one of the hardest ones. Because,
it's the most overlooked. It's the most overlooked too, as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, when I was a young mom, I made mistakes. I have to forgive myself for that.
That's right. It's true. Yes.
And so, but with my brother, my mom called me on the phone to stop him or to calm him down. And so I thought in my mind, my job was to save my brother.
Right.
No, it's not. It's not my job to save my brother. So when I forgave myself.
Oh, that's good.
So much weight got lifted off. And I was like, oh, now that's I can so heal. Good. I couldn't heal until that. And I got goosebumps again because.
Yeah, that's good.
I was so stuck and I help people get unstuck. But I was so stuck, like you said, autopilot, all that stuff. And didn't even realize because I was just going through life that I was, all these things were bothering me.
Yeah.
And I, like you said, migraines, stroke symptoms, all this stuff, was having all these things.
And never realized it, right? Did you realize it? Did you like even like, didn't even click for me. Didn't even click.
Not at all. And so with forgiveness.
No one knows your business better than you. So who better to create your website than, well, you? Wix's website builder puts it all in your hands. Create a beautiful website just by talking with AI or choosing from thousands of templates. Customize every detail with simple drag and drop tools and get everything you need to start running business your way. Build more, think bigger, and do it all yourself on Wix.
At Capella University, learning online doesn't mean learning alone. You'll get support from people who care about your success, like your enrollment specialist, who gets to know you and the goals you'd like to achieve. You'll also get a designated academic coach who's with you throughout your entire program. Plus, career coaches are available to help you navigate your professional goals. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
When you forgive somebody else, it's for you to gain back control. It is not for them.
Well, that's good too. That's really good. Gain control. That's really good.
That's one thing. Yes. So you don't forget what happened. You forgive it for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you hopefully will not allow that situation, person, whatever, to evoke emotion in you. For you, they control you. So say, for instance, I'm mad at Stacy. And every time I get to work and Stacy's there, I'm like, ugh. And I get upset. I might not do my job. I'm not doing my job correctly. I'm thinking about all day. Oh, Stacy, I don't even drink coffee. I'm not allowed. But, but Stacy drank my creamer. And this is not. And I'm mad at Stacy. Yeah. Stacy don't give a hoot, Nanny. She's doing her thing. You are being controlled by the emotion that you are feeling attached to that person, right?
Right.
If you forgive, and there's a lot of things that I say, dump out in your brain. You might not even know who you want to forgive.
Exactly. It could be something that's associated with that Stacy's doing from the past that somebody else did.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to, I want people to write it down.
Yes.
Dump and what it is in your brain. Mm-hmm. What does it make you feel? Okay. Well, when I see Stacy, especially if she's drinking creamer, that made me, I'm all making it up. I'm not
drink that coffee. Creamer, Stacy. Yes. Drink it.
But when I see Stacy, I might get red. My heart might race. I might clench my fist. I might sweat my eyebrows, right? So all those things are evoking physical symptoms or or emotions. So
absolutely. Yeah.
So identifying those, which is my second step, is identifying triggers, is helpful because then you can nip them in the bud to the point where, again, you're in control. So I did not know that anything that sounded like a gun for the longest time would freak me out. I would duck down. I would cry. I would shake. It would take me hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like hours. If I watched a movie and I didn't know somebody was going to die in it, especially a certain way, I was done for 1-2 hours. I would be so upset. And so now I can watch something. Not that I choose to, I don't like those kind of movies, but I can watch something and somebody can die in the movie. And this one time, it wasn't even that long ago, maybe 8 months ago. And I laughed and said, that looks so fake. And it's like, now it's like, I know that it's not my brother. Nothing's happening to anybody.
You changed the narrative around it. You changed. Right. Yes. Got it.
You have to shift your mindset and look at stuff differently. And it's harder with some situations. Okay.
It
I was in domestic abuse relationships. Okay. It is harder for me to forgive a narcissist than it is just Stacy, right? Because that's different. So I also have a kid with the person, and I am going to go see one of the people that abused me. He's going to be in the same place as me in April, and I haven't seen him in years. And so my forgiveness is going to be so tested that day.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
And so, but I can. I've seen him. I've seen him before.
Right.
It's been years, but we're going to actually be in a birthday party for our grandchild together.
Right.
So I am going to be tested the whole time, and I'm in control of how I react.
Right.
And that's what I, you know, that's what I go through with people.
Okay. So, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So I like that you said control. I like that you gain control back. That's really, really important. The one you said prior to that was that it wasn't your responsibility. And I think we don't realize that, because I you just brought this to my attention. When my brother died, it was we had made a pact to take care of each other. It was, and then when, you know, in my family, I was a second mom because my mom was always troubled with my stepdad and situations with them. And I became their protector. So I took it hard. I took it really, really hard. Like, I was supposed to be there with him, you know, and he got, you know, in my head, I'm saying he got out of my sight one time, and this what happens, you know. And that's so important to know that, you know, they're not your responsibility. You know, they're, you know, God's, if anybody's, you know what I'm saying? But really, they're not, you know, it's especially in certain age. Let me just say that. I don't want to say children. Children are, you know, you train them up. That's your responsibility.
Yeah.
But when they're older, you're not responsible for saving everybody. You can't save everybody. And the second thing you said is control. Oh my God, you gain more control, because when you don't forgive, I was out of control, man. I wasn't forgiving anybody. Everybody had to pay. Everybody had to pay. Every time I saw somebody from that party, it was like blasting them. I'm blasting them. You know, everybody had to pay. But I didn't have control. And not until I did, you know, sit down and like really, I guess I was talking to him at his gravesite. And I said, I have to let this go. It's eating me up. And the, you know, it gave me this resting bitch face that was like, don't you mess with me. Like, it was like, and I was walking around like that for ages, like, you know, for years. And everybody's like, why do you look so mean? I'm like, and in my head, I'm in my head. I'm not even looking at them because I'm still thinking about this. And I had to realize, man, this face is really serious. This is a problem. It's a whole problem. But gaining control back, ladies and gentlemen, that is so good. Those two pieces there, diamonds. So I want to talk about what you said about your life, about your divorcing. Let's talk about in the spectrum of grief. Was there a time when you were divorcing that you had grief about who you thought he could be, or that you grieved about it? In any way, in any form?
Yeah. So my situation was kind of weird, but I'll keep it brief. So I don't want to put his business out on the street, but
that's fine.
The last couple of years, we were not no good together. Okay.
Right.
We would switch back and forth. Like, we would live together. We were married. We tried to go to counseling. It just did not work.
Right.
And so I, for that part, at that beginning, yes. But by the time I was leaving, the grief was more about my son, my dog that we adopted together, my house.
Right. Okay.
And my businesses. I lost my businesses. I had to start all over. I left with three kids because unfortunately I couldn't take him because it was illegal. Because I didn't adopt him. But I left with three kids. I went to the same church for years. So I left my church, my two businesses.
Wow.
My hospital, I was at for 2 years.
Okay.
I lived there for 11 and a half years, but not in the same house. But that house, they denied us that house. And I had to write a letter to the bank to get that house. I worked so hard for all those things. That's what I grieved over, was like, the kid that he's on my back. Okay. All four of my kids are tattooed in a heart in my back. But like, that's the hard part, was like, my life got flipped upside down.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even about him anymore, because I was kind of over that at this point, just because it had been 2 years of us trying to make it work. And, but it was like the area that had been in, all my friends, like everything, you know, my family was there. Only my mom was in Georgia. So I didn't get to see my dad anymore. I used to see my dad twice a year. He was in Maryland and he would come. I didn't get to see him anymore. It's just like so many things happened. I had to pay back a person for their wedding, because I was supposed to photograph their wedding, but I had to pay it back. So it was
a lot of grief was going on. A lot of grief.
Yeah. I was like, ah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, I didn't even realize that. It's just coming together. Yeah, I understand it even more now. So now we're wrapping it up, kind of now, audience. To my guest, what's one small compassionate action that maybe someone in the audience is that they should acknowledge grief and begin the process of healing? What's one small thing that they can do?
Wow, they can do a lot of things. One thing, like we just said, forgiveness. You can listen, be there, ask for help, important. That's one small thing you can do, is not be alone. Don't suffer in silence. Please ask for help. Reach out to people.
You're loved
and you're worthy and you're so important. So please just ask, even if somebody comes and sits with you and you don't even say a word, at least do, you know, reach out to someone.
Right. That's good. Okay. All right, Danielle, how can we locate you, my audience, locate you around the internet?
Okay. So if you look me up, you Google me, you will find all the things. But Danielle Boer, Danielle Boer 82 is my Instagram. I can't get into it right now, but I have a lot of Instagrams. Coaching. That's my coaching one. But if you look me up on Facebook, which is K Danielle Boer Stroman, all the names, then you will find the links to all of my things. That's the easiest way to say it. You'll find the link to everything.
Awesome. And what's the name of your book so we can look for it?
It's called Inside CJ's Mind.
Wow. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we really thank you for being here today with us and enjoying and learning about grief. And I want to thank my esteemed guest, Danielle Boer, for being here today on Keeping It Real on Purpose. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time around.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Join me each week for unfiltered discussion about beauty trends, self-care journeys, wellness tips, and the products we absolutely love and cannot get enough of. If you are a skincare obsessive and you spend 20 plus minutes on your skincare routine, this podcast is for you. Or if you're a newbie at the beginning of your skincare journey, you'll love this podcast as well, because we go so much deeper than beauty. I talk to incredible and inspiring people from across industries about their relationship relationship with beauty. You'll also hear from skincare experts. We break down lots of myths in the beauty industry. If this sounds like your thing, search for Naked Beauty on your podcast app and listen along. I hope you'll join us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.